This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
We all know we need to eat well and exercise to be healthy, but the factor that often gets overlooked is our sleep. How important is it to get a good sleep, and what are the health implications of not getting enough sleep? Professor Delwyn Bartlett is a sleep expert from the Wilcock Institute of Medical Research. Hi, Professor Bartlett.
Hi, Katrina.
How'd you sleep last night?
Oh, actually really well, because I've just come back from being on holiday and I was very jet lagged for two nights, so last night was great.
Okay. Now, why is it important to get a good night's sleep?
We're still in many ways learning about what sleep does for us, but we all of us know that when you do have a good night's sleep, you feel so much better and you have more energy. And I think it's that wonderful thing of just having time out time that you're not responsible, not thinking, don't have to worry, plan or do anything. So it's pretty special.
And how much sleep do we actually need?
It's actually a U-shaped curve. So if you think about a capital U, and if you think about the bottom part of a capital U, we probably need somewhere between about 6.5 and 8.5 hours of sleep. And if we have too little sleep or too much sleep, it's not very healthy.
Is that right? So are people pretty much all the same in that, or do different people need different amounts of sleep? Or are they kidding themselves? You know, you hear of these people who get by on 4 or 5 hours sleep a night.
Yeah, look, there are some exceptions, and they are there, and people do seem to manage that for a while, but it seems to catch up at some stage. And the interesting one is that as we age, we don't respond as well to being a shift worker, and we don't respond as well to the effects of jet lag. So it does sort of catch up at some stage.
Interesting. So what are the health implications if you long-term don't get enough sleep, if you're sleep-deprived for, you know, a period of months or years? What kind of health impacts does that have?
Look, we've got to sort of separate things out a little bit. If we look at sleep deprivation, is that that means generally that it's voluntary sleep deprivation.
So people just staying up too late and
Giving themselves the opportunity to sleep. And that's often quite different from when you've got insomnia. And insomnia is generally, not always, but generally relates to poor quality sleep. So people give themselves the opportunity to sleep, but the quality of their sleep is very fragmented. And they feel pretty awful. So they end up being wired and tired, somebody who has insomnia, whereas somebody who doesn't give themselves the opportunity to sleep, they're just thinking that it's not that important. And really it is, because we know that the long-term implications of sleep deprivation predispose us to such things as cardiovascular disease, diabetes type 2, lowered immune function, and really putting it at ourselves at risk in terms of mood. A lowered mood, and that has a huge impact on our general well-being.
So it could be even things like depression.
And so, then if you're not sleeping well and you have insomnia, then you're very much at risk of developing depression, and most people will have what we call sleep anxiety. So sleep becomes a focal point for them, and they feel very anxious every day about whether they're going to get enough sleep.
What about, so it sounds like insomnia is when people sleep badly and wake up a lot, but what about people who are good sleepers but get interrupted sleep? You know, for example, the most obvious example is perhaps a baby waking you up. Is that a problem if you sleep well, but if you're woken a lot during the night, if you have interrupted sleep, does that still work or not?
The piece of information that most people don't realise is that everybody wakes 2 to 3 times a night. So even a really, really good sleeper, young, healthy person in the range from 18 to 24, which is probably the height of our health and all sorts of other things, you're going to wake 2 to 3 times a night. And as we age, those wakes increase. So it's not the wake that's the issue. It's what we do with the wake and how we respond to the wake.
So if you go back to sleep, and I guess a lot of the time you don't remember that you've even woken up, then that doesn't cause much of a disturbance.
Doesn't cause any disturbance. But if you know that waking is normal and that when you wake you don't start thinking, planning, worrying, you think, okay, I'm awake, that's okay. It's a little bit like if you're a healthy sleeper and you wake and you think, oh, I thought I was going to have to get up. I'm so lucky I can go back to sleep, because you look up and you happen to notice that it's still very dark outside. Oh, fantastic, I'm going back to sleep. That's a very healthy response. But if you've had a difficulty with your sleep and then you feel overwhelmed with being awake, that's when you can develop considerable difficulties.
That is so interesting. I'm speaking with Professor Delwyn Bartlett. She's a sleep researcher and expert from the Wilcox Institute of Medical Research. Now, does it matter when in the night you get your sleep? There's this rumour that sort of goes around periodically that the sleep you get before midnight is the best and most important sleep. Is there any truth to that?
Look, I've asked many of my sleep colleagues overseas and here in Australasia as well, and we don't know where it comes from, but I suspect it probably comes from parents like me who insisted on having their children in bed early because I needed my own time. So, look, what basically happens, it doesn't matter what time you go to sleep. You need a sufficient number of hours of sleep, but we get most of our deep sleep in the first one-third of our sleep time, and that's occurs whatever time we go to sleep.
So maybe that's where the rumour comes from, is that it's the idea that it's this early sleep that's important. And I guess
the
if you have
it's important, but not the timing of whether it's before midnight. I guess the thing is if you're going to sleep after midnight and you have to get up at a certain time, you're going to get a truncated sleep. We do need, 7 hours is pretty cool.
Yeah, most of us, I guess, do have some sort of commitment that requires us to get out of bed at, 7 or 8 in the morning or 6 or something like that. So I guess that's where it causes problems. What are the most common sleep problems? You mentioned insomnia. What are the other sort of sleep issues that people have?
Well, insomnia is the most common, and then we're looking at other things such as obstructive sleep apnea. So that means when your airway either completely or partially closes during sleep, and that's associated generally with loud snoring.
So that's how you can tell if there's a problem
with
it.
Yeah, and the person stops breathing. So stopping breathing is very dangerous when it's left untreated because it predisposes you not only to cardiovascular disease, or there's a cause and effect situation with that, plus, weight gain, diabetes, lowered immune function, and, safety factors of not being safe to drive and probably not being safe to work in certain occupations. So it's very important to get that treated.
And are most sleep problems treatable?
Yes, they are. Some of them take a little bit longer to treat, and then sometimes what happens is individuals will have, say, obstructive sleep apnea and insomnia. So that's a bit of a double whammy, and that's not unusual.
Oh, really? So another question I have for you is, how important is it to sleep at the same time each day? Like if you're a shift worker on a rotating roster, is that likely to interfere with both the quality of sleep and kind of your rhythms as well?
Yes, it does. Yeah, and it makes it very difficult. A rotating shift, fast rotating shift, there's been some research to suggest that that can be quite useful. But again, if somebody's a bit more of a night owl, so you're more inclined to sort of stay up later and go to sleep later and sleep later and all those sorts of things, it seems that you're more easily adaptable to afternoon shifts and night shifts. And then you would find that an early morning shift of having to start, say, somewhere between 6 and 7 is very difficult for you. Whereas a true morning person would finds it very difficult to do night shifts. So those sort of basic predispositions, and perhaps if we could screen people for that, you'd sort of be suggesting, well, maybe rotating shifts are not good for you. Because if you're on a rotating shift, or if you're on a permanent night shift, it seems that you lose between 5 and 7 hours of sleep per week.
Yeah, right. My husband used to do he's a night owl, and he used to do a rotating shift, and one of his shifts was at 3:30 in the morning, and that was a killer.
And it feels so bad. I mean, you're permanently jet-lagged.
Yeah. And what about napping? If you haven't had enough sleep, is it a good idea to take a nap, or does that just throw out the whole system?
Look, naps are one of nature's little gifts as far as I'm concerned. Fantastic things to do. Look, napping, where you can have a nap of 10 to 20 minutes, keeps you in the lighter stages of sleep, stage 2 sleep.
Okay.
And that means that you wake up without feeling as though your brain's woolly because you haven't gone into deep sleep. And it means that your performance is generally improved, but it doesn't reduce what we call your homeostatic drive or your sleep debt.
So you have to keep it short then.
You need to keep it short, and you need to have, from having a nap to attempting sleep, you need at least 8 hours.
Oh, between the nap and your bedtime, you need 8 hours.
Generally.
Oh, interesting. So the late afternoon nap's probably not a good idea then.
Well, it's great if you know you're going to go out and have a
big
night
out.
Yeah, big night out, that's fine. But if you're not, you may find that you could then feel quite anxious because you can't go to sleep, and it's just you don't have a big enough sleep debt to go to sleep.
Interesting. I can't nap. It's impossible for me. It just doesn't happen.
You could learn to nap.
Really?
Yes.
What you could start to do
is you can lie on the floor because the floor is neutral, get a little hand towel, roll it up and put it under your neck, and just close your eyes with no real sort of goal of going to sleep, but just learning to feel comfortable lying down during the daytime in a very neutral place, and you can gradually learn to do that.
Maybe I'll try it now.
Yeah.
Bad idea.
Well, when my children were little, I used to have a nap under my desk at work, and then somebody came in one lunchtime and said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Oh, I've just lost my earring," because I didn't want to tell them.
Surely when you're a sleep specialist, though, you can get away with it. Just doing some research.
Well, I wasn't working in sleep in those days.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for your time. We've learned a lot today. I really appreciate it.
You're most welcome.
Yeah, it's Professor.
And I'm not a full professor. I'm only an associate.
Oh, I'm sorry. Associate professor. She's fessed up now. That's not your fault. That was someone else told me that you were a professor. So clinical associate professor. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Delwyn Bartlett from the Wilcock Institute of Medical Research. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
This has been a Hope 103.2 podcast. For helpful articles, station news, videos, devotional emails, and more podcasts, visit hope1032.com.au.